Today is September 2nd, 2019. It's Monday. This is part two of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Dick Hingson, H-I-N-G-S-O-N. And Dick's first name is actually Dickson, D-I-C-K-S-O-N. My name is Tom Martin. This interview is being conducted at the kitchen table here at our house in Flagstaff, Arizona. Good morning, Dick. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Just wonderful.
Good. Thank you so much for your willingness to carry on with what is part two of this oral history.
That's fine.
At the end of part one, you were finishing up your summer of 1959 as a busboy.
That's correct.
At the North Rim Lodge. And I was curious if, one of the things I was curious about that I did not ask you about in part one was when you were in the dish pit in the summer of 58, there was a song the dishwashers would sing to the guests. And you mentioned that. And in 59, when you were a server, was there a song that you sang as servers to the guests?
I honestly can't remember that we sang. I can't remember this. It's a tricky one, but in 59 we had two kinds of, or three opportunities for busboys to sing. One was as a part of the evening song from the dining room steps with the organ. We would do that about 8 o'clock. And there was some kind of a song or short repertoire of songs that would be sung on the dining rooms, the steps into the dining room with the organist right there. And I don't honestly remember that we had we had written a busboy song, but we sang a little standard repertoire of old favorites. And there was also a singing that would occasionally take place to people who were having birthdays or honeymoons.
Okay.
And so a honeymoon song, that Tell Me Why, I remember that one. We would sing that at the tables to whoever was so lucky as to be on their honeymoon.
Uh-huh.
Or we would sing a birthday song to someone having a birthday at the tables, in addition to some short repertoire that we did on the steps.
Okay.
Of just traditional favorites of some kind. And then we weren't yet doing what was called the grand show. It got more elaborated through those summers. And I can't remember, honestly, singing a busboy song in the grand show. It was the next season of 60, we would be singing a grand show, which had every department in the lodge. And we wrote a desk clerk song for that, because by then I was desk clerk. But I can't remember singing a waitress busboy song in the grand show, because I wasn't then in 1960 a busboy, or we could research that, but I don't have that here. Yes, that's correct. There would have been a song probably, but we wrote a desk clerk song for 1960.
So is there anything else about 59 that you wanted to mention before we go to 1960?
And I'm just referring occasionally to some stuff I put up here.
That's
fine. I don't have anything that I particular in the summer of 69 other than what we covered.
Okay.
59 was a busboy summer, and there were highlights. Yes, we talked about those.
So in 1960, in the spring of 1950, you had gone to Case Western Reserve University for the first semester of college.
That's correct.
And then were you able to go through finals that complete that semester and then get on the train and head to Grand Canyon? Is that how that
Yes, it apparently happened that way, excepting maybe a few days late because of, I have to research whether it was 59 or 60. One of them was delayed a few days by my grandfather's death.
Okay.
And funeral.
Okay.
In Anniston, Alabama, in a remote cemetery. And then but whether it was 59 or 60, I'd have to do, we'd have to check the date on that.
Okay.
So yes, the otherwise that you would go back on the train. I think in 59 it was still, I think the grandfather was 60. So it would have been on the train in 59 and arriving similar way in 50, I'll say that for provisionally for right now.
In 1960?
We're up to 60, aren't we? That's right. Yeah. Unless the grandfather had died in 60, right. in which case I had to fly and then come in on a shorter train route or something.
Okay. So would it, assuming you took the train, it would be the same to Lund?
You would get off at Lund. That's right. And then be picked up by a yellow bus company, Utah Parks Company bus, and driven to the Cedar City train station for some interlude or picking up other, I don't know what. But we then would leave from there after maybe lunch there and head on to Zion and the North Rim, which was always the route through Zion and the North Rim.
Okay. Via Kanab?
Via Kanab and Perry's Lodge, that's right.
Okay. So at that time, from Kanab to Fredonia, there's a dirt road that goes across the flat plains and then up to Jacobs Lake Lodge. And that road is still in existence today. It's a logging road.
A logging road, but we didn't take that. We went up the highway.
You went the highway.
A state highway.
Got it. Okay, which is where the road is today, where Highway 89.
Yeah, that hasn't changed. It was always that road.
Great. Okay.
I began to consider that my sacred road over time.
The Highway 89 there?
The highway into Grand Canyon out of Kanab and Fredonia. Mm. I would look for it from the plane.
Really?
I considered it as of basically sacred value to me personally.
Uh-huh.
Because it was the entrance or the re-entrance. So every plane flight and thereafter in jets and so forth, I would look for that.
So is it safe to say in 1960, after finishing up your first year of college, you were looking forward to going back to the North Rim?
Oh, yeah. The North Rim was definitely, and this was to be an elevation of some sort, you know. And so, yes, the answer is yes.
Elevation meaning working your
elevation
way up
and, you know, pay, promotion, status.
Uh-huh.
Not yet what they call staff, but the dining room was a prestigious location after all. You're out there with the big windows, and I should have said that one of my jobs, I could just add that one of my jobs as a busboy was that in the evenings, because it has meaning now, was to at sunset raise the big blind on the west end of the dining hall so that the full light would come in right at sunset.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you could raise them in those years, not anymore,
but then
you could, and that's important for history.
Okay, yes. That reminds me of something though, moving from a busboy to a desk clerk.
Right.
Would take you out of the tip pool.
Yes, it would.
So that must have been a cut in pay, in a way.
Probably. You wouldn't get any more. Yes, it was probably some kind of a cut in pay, but I didn't care because the desk was closer to the nerve center of the lodge in terms of things I thought I could contribute with.
Hmm.
And so I did not conceive of it as... I was more closer to the management circle.
Okay.
Anything behind the desk would be, and to the overall running of the lodge itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my view of it.
Did they give you a uniform? Did you have some sort of dress to wear?
You got to dress more. You wore a jacket.
Okay. Of your choice, or was it a company?
No, it was
jacket? Uniform.
I believe that dress attire was just business casual, something like that. I believe.
Okay.
You know.
And your work hours on a on, were on a rotating schedule.
That's
of
correct.
Morning, midday, and evening shifts. How did it work for the desk clerk
desk
schedule?
Desk clerk would have been a 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. shift, followed by a 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. shift, and there was not a midday shift.
So there was
the morning shift or the night shift.
Right.
Okay. And a night clerk came in at 11 p.m.
and worked all night.
And worked all that was
the rest of the
just
day.
To maintain a presence and do the books.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Did you get into that job at all, or were you just the morning or the afternoon?
No, I got into it a little bit, and you'll see that as we go along, I actually was promoted to chief clerk eventually.
Okay.
But not at first. It
okay.
was hard earning that job at first.
So in 1960, as clerk, what were the new things that you were exposed to that summer?
Well, you had to learn the reservation system, first and foremost. The reservation system involved a board with tabs for each cabin, 200-some cabins, which had to be properly managed. We do it now by computer, but then it was had to be done by hand using color coding for reservations for people who had shown up or whenever they showed up. You had the hazards were always double sales or especially not renting a room that mattered to the management, you know, because of mistake. And holding reservations according to some scheme where if they called in, you held them and honored them rather than selling them. And then, of course, there was the question of literally turning people away, which is a big deal.
Because they would drive all
that
distance.
They had come all that distance in, and they had to be sent back to, at best, Kaibab Lodge, 20 miles north, or to Jacob Lake Inn, or to Kanab, 83, or to Fredonia or Kanab. So that was a major deal if there was an error or a mistake made.
Did you have a lot of people that showed up assuming they were going to be able to get a room and you guys were full?
Yeah, there was no choice but to send them back. Now, of course, there was also a campground at the inn a mile back up the road. I assume some dealt with it that way because that usually, I think, would have had space, usually. There was nothing at the inn. You couldn't rent there. You get food, buy food, but you otherwise were sent, you'd be sent back. You would just have to send them back.
Right.
There's no place.
Right. So what kind of snafus do you remember?
Well, the snafus, yes, there were snafus that I had at first. And learning any very detailed, closely fitted thing like that, you're going to have some errors at first. And I do remember a conversation with Jim Williams, who was the desk clerk, the chief clerk. He was the chief clerk. He was a more LDS. He was either returned missionary or to be a missionary. He was very... Well, he was very meticulous and very strict. I mean, he turned out to be a doctor, you know. I mean, he ran this shop tightly. I got into trouble with him at first because of mistakes. And at first, there was one point where I wasn't sure I could do it. I mean, it was demanding. I offered to just take another, be demoted if that satisfied him. He was very, he'd get very angry about double sales and mistakes. But his basic approach was, you can do this and I need this. So he kept me on, and I actually wound up to be as good a desk clerk as they'd ever had.
How old was he at the time?
He must have been a couple years older, not
okay.
much more.
20?
In fact, I think I roomed with him or his brother. He was about 20. He would have been, 18. He would have been about probably 20.
Okay. What else do you remember about him?
Well.
What did he look like? Was he tall?
He was a slender, tall, LDS missionary to be, for sure. Maybe had been, I can't. With a brother there. but just not a whole lot other than that he was competent and ran a tight shop.
Okay.
I do not remember much else, because once I was doing it and it was working, then he was very satisfied, and there wasn't much, except he was, personable, I thought, so especially his younger brother, Tom, I don't remember much. I did not room with him because he was staff. He would have been in a cabin. So that I did not know him real well. We didn't have much, just chat going on that I remember.
Yeah. Okay. Who were the friends that you made with on that 1960 summer?
Well, the friends then would have been probably, I'm pretty sure the Canans, Muriel and Mike, because I'm pretty sure Mike had started the organ, playing the organ. And Muriel was, I'd made friends with as a waitress, we helped develop the grand show together. That was a project on the side that I got to work with. That's where you make friends.
Question about spelling of Canaan.
Canan.
And where were they from?
Mike came from, I'm pretty sure, at that point, something like Missouri. Muriel was from an established LDS family in Salt Lake. Okay. Or Provo. Maybe it's Provo. Provo. As best I can remember. We can check this because I'm still in touch with them. Oh. This could be checked.
Okay. Well, that's fine.
We're happy to do side research on little things like that. It's doable.
And so Muriel was a server? She was working in the dining
room? She was a server in the dining room, and Mike was the organist.
Okay, fun.
So
were your roommates that year? Do you remember?
Most of the year I was still in the dorm.
Okay.
And that, I must have been, this is hard. I think I'd moved in with people I more wanted to be with. It was no more the garbage men they'd been fired from the summer before.
Right.
Maybe Randy Saltus was one of them. Now, Randy was from the East, and he and I were kind of intellectuals. He was Middlebury College.
Huh.
I probably did room with him if I got it right. We had a friendship going all right. He was also, I think, a desk clerk, maybe on the other shift. That's all I remember of him from right there.
And
in 60.
S-A-L-T-U-S?
Saltus. Randy Saltus. S-A-L-T-U-S.
Thank you.
High level. I don't know what his pull was with the railroad. It would have probably been some for him. He would have been a friend. And I do remember one scene from where he had brought a phonograph record. And we played the Mormon Tabernacle Choir with organ out there on a plug out of the end of the men's dorm. Lovely. Lovely out there listening to that. In the Battle Hymn of the Republic, it was that record. And so I do remember that as a very elevating, grand experience out there at the south end of the boys' dorm, just sitting there under the trees during a rec. But as far as... other people from that summer, Randy would have been one of them. But I can't remember very many names right now. Maybe something will pop up.
Did the LDS have a church service?
They had services, and they were held on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. in the rec hall overlooking the Grand Canyon.
Okay.
I considered myself in the Protestant fold, which was, their services were, Harry Britt, for example, ran their services for the Christian ministry in the national parks, which furnished that service to the parks, and their services were, it seems to me, in the campfire circle at North, at the North Rim campground on Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock. That's my memory of it. I don't recall a morning service, but that was the two main services there. Now, the Catholics had something which I didn't intersect with at all. They would have had a mass and a priest that would have come from somewhere, but I don't know. I did not associate with that. I experimented with the Mormon service once or twice just to see, my goodness, what is this like right here in the Lodge Rec Hall Auditorium? So that's where I knew that their testimonies in their way they conducted this, you would wind up with a lot of tearful sessions for some reason. I never have completely understood this, but this is what there is, a deep religion. It's designed that way.
And Harry Britt, how do you spell his last name?
Yeah, I worked with him on the desk. He was the Christian minister in the national parks.
How do you spell his
assigned
last name?
Britt, Harry Britt.
How old was he?
Oh, he would have been young 20s probably at that point. Yeah,
Okay.
he would have been either that or maybe night clerk, I can't remember which, but he was associate on the desk. That's
Okay.
correct.
So what were some of the interesting stories you were exposed to that summer as a front desk?
Well, other than the trip across the canyon, let me see, I did.
We'll get to that in a minute, but I'm just thinking about the front desk job. You're trying to,
Yeah,
figure out
well,
who's got a reservation, what
yeah,
room do
you're
they
dealing
go
with a
into.
teletype. I like the teletype. The teletype is an invention, a forerunner of a forerunner of the internet, I suppose, because it ran by some sort of like a phone, well, electronic phone situation, which is digital. So you could send what were like little, that's how reservations often got handled. You could, the one park would email somebody's reservation to
So
this
these would
park.
be like telegrams.
You could send these like telegrams on your own. You have that, they had that capacity, the Utah Parks Company, and sometimes informal messaging could be, you'd get, I mean, there wasn't a total restriction on what could be teletyped, So I wound up being pretty good at that because I'm a very excellent keyboarder. And so that added actually to my ability to shine a bit here there. You could handle these messages. That was the main alternative to the phone.
That would
And the
be.
switchboard. Now, there was a switchboard, and you had to know how to run that.
How did that work?
Switchboard was a row of rows of little buttons, and you had these cords that you plug one into another one. So guests wanting to talk to each other across cabins, you had a family with three cabins, well, then you could plug them in that way, or they could be incoming long distance and so forth, so you would handle that, and a keyboard of some sort to match it, and that was right there at the front desk. And I rather like that because I'm a typist and a person that communicated digital, became quite digitally proficient later on, but that was the beginning, sure. So that was a part of the job, was to run that. You had to be
Okay.
able to take some hours from making that work. That was, I mean, you would spend some hours doing that, seems to me. There was, I can't remember a designated operator on that.
So not only did you have to get people into their rooms, you had to work the teletype machine and the phone system. Did you have to handle money, actual
And you'd have to have money. And it had to come out right at the end of each shift.
And how did that work?
Well, you had receipts, and each shift had to balance to the penny with its books. So the senior desk clerk had to be able to get it to come out right. That was part of the job. If it didn't come out right, you stayed until it did. You stayed after, and you weren't paid for it either. You just stayed and reconciled the books to the penny. Well, there was one other job on the desk, which I should say, since you asked about it, which was you participated in sing-aways to the buses leaving at 9 o'clock and 1 o'clock. There were bus departures, and you'd go out and sing, called sing-alongs, or sing-aways, rather. Sing-aways, they were sing-aways. And this is known generally that we had those. And there was a repertoire of song. You would go out there and stand in the little inlet that's right around the flagpole, and you would sing to these people. Now, the thing about the singing was that it was a fairly standard repertoire, which I can't remember all the songs. One I do remember was The Business of the Departing Employees, when you came to the end of the summer, because that was a big farewell moment. You had, in very intense bonding, would have occurred by the end of the summer. And so you had a farewell song, which would always be sung the basic song was "So Long, It's Been Good to Know You, So Long, It's Been Good to," that was to the buses, you know, and you'd wish them, these are referenced in their packets of these songs. "So Long, It's Been Good to Know You" is the one we would sing to them. When we sang goodbye to the employee at the end of the summer, it was a much more usually somber moment of separation. We all remember, we come September, something like that. We'll all remember, we hate to say goodbye to you. And there would be some kissing there, which would be tearful. People would kiss and hug. And so for, especially in the 1960, which was not always kind of uptight, time emotionally, but there would be emotion with departing employees at these singaways as we sang this song about September. And so, I don't have the whole lyrics in front of me, but they could be accessed. Anyway, that singing was a part of the job. Then there was the other singing, which we developed for the desk crew for the evening performance in the rec hall. And there was a desk clerk song, which I helped write with the organist and his wife.
Do you remember the words?
Yes, it was, "We are the three ladies from Louisville. We have a reservation for you to fill, a room with sharing bath." That was the first verse of it. Now, I can't remember all the rest by memory, but we could get it.
That could have been pretty fun.
Yeah, that was fun. The three ladies from Louisville would come out on the stage in big hats, and stuff like this. They were dressed in a kind of a typical old maids traveling together sort of a style. They'd sing, "We are the three ladies from Louisville." And I helped write that song with Mike Canaan, the organist, who put all this together. I could probably access the whole thing through him, maybe.
It would be fun
I could probably get the whole thing, but I can't remember them all right now. Okay. That might have been two or three verses. About that, but I gave you the first.
Yeah. Fun.
It could be accessed. Make a note, we could get maybe. They'll do. I'm in touch with them now. It's not hard.
And that I'm assuming, just like today, occasionally someone you knew by name recognition would show up to check in. Either a film star or a politician?
My parents came. it didn't have to be a film star, although, we'll just start with my parents, because they came back in that summer, I think. And, in fact, we took a mule ride to the bottom with my mother and father and me. And I remember the mule ride still. My mother with sore hip. I got pictures of this. And then me, I got a bleeding nose coming out of that mule trip for some reason. I don't know why. But there was the mule trip. There was also a potential disaster where my father once again rose to the rescue of the company, because we had a man had been thrown from a car or something on the road between the inn, or the Cape, the road to Point Imperial along that road, and there he was with a dislocated shoulder, which is very painful. And my father just happened to have a gas bag, a little portable oxygen and anesthesia machine with him, which he used to demonstrate. And without any formalities, my father took care of this man on the side of the road under the supervision of the lodge assistant manager, who was Lamar Snyder, Lamar Snyder, who was then the lodge manager, but after a couple of years of doing that, graduated to become the general manager of the Utah Parks Company. But Lamar was quite a figure in those years, and Lamar saw all this with my father, participated in that, and we took care of that man. We got him the immediate relief he needed, and in fact, I helped my father with instruction from my father about how to relocate the shoulder. You had to snap it back into place. Mm-hmm. You may have had mm-hmm. some experience with mm-hmm. this. It does pop back into place, and we did that. Well, that only could elevate my standing and with the management. I mean, another crisis averted neatly, you know, and so. We had seen Lamar in special situations like that, but in my job as a junior desk clerk. Well, I think you had a junior desk clerk level and you had a senior desk clerk level. I started, no doubt, as a junior desk clerk, but I became competent enough to be promoted with a few extra cents per hour to senior desk clerk, eventually, and it was just greater. Status and responsibility went with that, and you were the one that had to check out the books.
That same summer?
I think I probably got promoted once I figured it out. I would have been promoted to senior desk clerk.
Okay.
We did have more status. I will say about the desk itself and the configuration there, that's important because in those years it was an open desk, like you had if you've ever been to the lodge, you've seen that there's this desk, except that what they put in there in the 70s was not historical. They put it like a bank teller's cage
up
there.
That's right.
That is not historical.
Okay.
And shouldn't have been stopped, but the Park Service allowed it. Whether this would fit under the Historical Act, I don't know. Except I can tell you the new contractor is telling them they're going to have to remove that by 2024.
Hmm.
It's already in the prospectus. It's because it was not historical.
Hmm. Okay.
And what it does is shuts off that whole operation from the guests. It's like you're running a secretive bank or something back there. It's not right.
That's right.
It was not done that way.
Okay.
It could be done the way we did it.
How deep was the desk between you as the clerk and the customer standing in front of you wanting a room?
Well, it's probably the same desk that you see now. I would say it was
2 feet wide, or
maybe something like that. You had this wraparound desk.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
Okay.
So
pretty easy to put a paper on.
Yeah,
have
you
somebody
put paper.
Sign.
Yes, and you
uh-huh.
sign. And you could talk. You could talk to them.
Yeah. Okay. Nice.
So that's all I can say about that. But and then the assistant manager would sort of hang out and the chief clerk, you know, would have stations also in the back, you know, but the desk clerks, the senior and junior out there in front of the wraparound desk.
There would have been a bellhop
with a teletop
somewhere?
Machine,
was
and
there...
the bellhops would come to the desk.
Okay.
You ring a bell, the bellhop would show up.
Okay. Right.
That's how you signaled, then somebody go take them up. They bought the room, now they had to be lodged.
Okay.
So the bellhop would ring the bell.
And so bellhop would arrive, help them with their luggage, and get them to their room.
And the biggest tips were those people. They got the biggest tips. They got rich with bellhops, you know.
Uh-huh. Did the bellhops get better tips than the waitresses?
That's a good question. That's a good question. And I think at least as much as the waitresses. I think they tended to get pretty good tips.
Okay.
You got a lot of sloping and considerable walking to deal with. That would have added to that because people could see that. carrying bags up and down hills. These are some of these pretty rich people.
Yeah.
You would get pretty good remuneration for
and,
that.
And they must have been winded at altitude. So watching people
at high altitude,
their stuff,
they knew that that was that too.
Yeah.
That's right. You had a kind of a captive audience there, in heavy bags, and people staying for a while in deluxes. So, yes, that's the old now. Yeah, so
besides your parents, who else was sort of a interesting person to come and say hello to, check them in their room?
I hadn't thought about this. I can't right offhand think of famous people. You had a certain number, though, of foreign visitors. So it was always interesting that you noticed there were people from France and Germany and like that. I do not remember maybe it'll come to me, but I don't remember a big, right now, a big dignitary, the governor or the, I don't remember over there people like that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. One of the things I did want to ask you, since you mentioned your father happened to be there on a very fortunate day when somebody dislocated their shoulder.
Yeah, that's right.
What do you remember about healthcare at the North Rim at that time?
The nurse. They had and this will provide a dramatic story later, but there was a nurse who was in the very front cabin there, along with the barber. There was an on-site barber and there was a nurse, full-time, who could perform all those functions for people who had things short of needing emergency care. You could stabilize most things through that person, that's all I did. Well, that was interesting. They had that job. That was their job for the summer. That's right.
And if you needed some cough medicine or a simple,
the employees would have access to this person.
Did the nurse have the ability to dispense that?
Yeah,
kind
she
of
could.
Stuff?
She could give you. Well, I don't know the limits, but she could. There were within reasonable limits or whatever with the state law, I suppose. There was probably some arrangement about that. But I just remember she could give out medicines and take care of simple bandaging and of splints and bones and, things would happen. We'll come later to a bigger incident, but...
I would think of cuts in the kitchen.
Well, you could... that's right. The employees could... Yeah, I never I needed anything out of there that I remember, so I don't have much memory of it.
Right.
But she was. She was there and available.
Right.
And then they did come down the road, a big incident with that. But I knew that she was there, and of course you had to get your hair cut, so you'd get, or if you didn't get it in Kanab, you were going to get it there. You had to have your hair cut.
Right.
So that was the two things they had right up front.
And did you normally, your days off, were they midweek? How did your schedule work?
Well, it varied. It didn't have the, it would have to rotate weekly. You'd get, I think it was only maybe one normally. But you could put them together by working somebody's shift or straight through some other week or something. There are ways to build them, especially for your Trans Canyon trip. Which was going
to
be,
you'd
have to work something out to have this with enough days off to get through that.
Uh-huh.
So,
uh-huh.
But they were, otherwise they would have been scheduled, days off. Then I think that shift may have been put up a few weeks ahead of time so people could see what it was going to be. They knew
how that was going to work. I also think about lightning in the summertime when I think about teletype machines and phones. And did the lightning wreak havoc with some of that stuff?
It seemed to me the power, we did have some occasional power failure. I don't remember huge things about it, but it seems to me that you could lose power and did. I told you the incident with the static electricity in the last interview. But other than that, I can't remember much about lightning. Yes, you would lose power. I think you could lose it. I'll get to it later, but you could lose it more often at Zion. But at the North Rim, you could. Okay. Yes, and and sometimes we were out.
Well, let's talk about your rim-to-rim journey then, that summer of 1960. Now, this would have been your third rim-to-rim.
Yeah, the third rim-to-rim journey. And, you know, they blur a little over the years. You know, you just... I just will say that I was getting stronger. I mean, I knew what it was. And so you knew what to do. You knew how to arrange time, food... and so in the course of years, this was getting something much less desperate than that first one. That was near, I'm lucky I got out on the first one. But the other ones, I remember there was some strengthening. I am trying to think if it was the summer of 60. We're having to fit what summer. There was one summer, and it might have been, we can just put it in there provisionally because it doesn't matter, where I arranged to meet my Aunt Rosa on the other side of the canyon, and at a certain time. She was a almost pioneer school teacher, come out here in the 30s or something, you know, teach from Alabama. And she brought my younger brother out there, and I remember, we can tell this story as well in 60 years. One, I mean, I remember we got out right on schedule. I had planned a schedule. I could do it, you know. Got out, and we wound up having dinner in the El Tovar, you know, with an orchestra playing in the balcony of the El Tovar. They had an orchestra in 1960. They would perform for dinner, a small orchestra, you know. Not anymore, but they had it then. And I'll never forget that. You know, all that. And of course, the soda fountain was always everybody talked about that soda fountain, because that was always the hiker's dream, to get into the Bright Angel soda fountain after hikes.
Where was that located?
Yeah, where it is now. It was just, they've kept that same
soda
fountain.
That same location.
That's
right.
That, you could see its lights at night. Everybody knew where that was, and it was the first place where you got out, you'd go to. So, you know. I remember, as I say, it got better because we timed it better. We were timing. So it just got, I can't say more about this trip versus that one. It was the same trail. You never went up the Kaibab Trail. You went down the river trail.
And then up the Bright Angel.
Mm-hmm. So it was, each time it was the same thing, except you were getting more in touch with what it was.
And who do you remember who you would have hiked across with that year?
Well,
or did you start going on your own?
You never would do that. You would go with a little group. Okay. You know, and I remember one, usually it was same-sex groups. I don't remember very, in those years, you wouldn't, you, they were usually, in fact, I don't even know that women did it as much in those years as they might now. Usually they were small gangs of boys, you know. I remember one was a football player from American Fork. He just stands in my mind as somebody memorable because he came from American Fork, which is a different town, and I remember, I liked him, you know, I remember him. I don't remember people very well though, because it's just the way it was. People of convenience, and you did the hikes, but I'd have to do research through letters or something.
Let's go back to, for a minute, when your mom and dad came out and you took a mule ride down.
That's right.
Did you go down to Roaring Springs and keep going to Phantom Ranch, or was it just down to Roaring Springs and back?
No, it was to Roaring Springs and back.
Okay.
All right. And with the mule, it was a very sane trip, except for the little problems that we had.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember one hike to Roaring Springs where I forgot the water, and I might say that was probably in the 59 or 60 summer. Maybe 59. I mean, I forgot. Of all things, I forgot water or something for it to fill it. Whatever I did, it was ridiculous. I remember coming back with salt crystallized on my face, and I that was rough. And I remember having, good thing I got out, and I remember drinking for hours. I fell in love with that soda fountain outside the, that water fountain outside the lodge desk for the whole shift. Mm. I was constantly getting water out of that fountain after I had returned to my shift. So that was one time where I remember a hiking error that could have been costly, but it was the Roaring Springs from the Roaring Springs waterfall. You would go to the waterfall and come back out.
But what I am thinking, Dick, is it, you, now you're introducing the fact that you started hiking not just the Big Rim.
No, you would go to the Roaring Springs hike would be another one. Uh-huh. That people like to
do.
Did
you do that like a couple times a summer?
I would do that one or two times a summer.
Okay.
Maybe one or maybe twice. And then you would do the Transip Trail.
How often did you do that?
Well, I got into that one. I remember doing that one. The strongest memory of that one was whatever was the last one I did on it not long before leaving. Mm-hmm. When you're getting ready to leave in the beginning of the feel of fall or lower light, and you get sharp crystal air from a cold front. Oh my God, it was gorgeous in those years, gorgeous. I still remember the gorgeousness, the clarity. You know, I remember doing that one with Ray Bayless, who was a desk clerk and then assistant manager. He was somebody I did hike with, was Ray Bayless, B-A-Y-L-E-S-S. He was more intellectual. You know, I would tend to gravitate to people with some head, brain. You know, he was a thinker. I think he was Jack Mormon or something because he smoked. I remember that. So, you know, if I could have opened up to him about a lot of things, probably could have. I mean, you get this pure Mormon bunch of stuff that could preoccupy the sins and the holiness code and everything else. But, you know, he was Jack Mormon. So I remember him. I still heard of him where he was much later in southern Arizona. I mean, one of the few, and the Canaans knew him. There was a little bit of an intellectual inner circle. The people who had some college training found each other one way or another.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So you had things like that. So that was a transit hike. And those were the main, if you didn't go out to Cape Royal, of course that was the other one, and then they would take employees out there, probably in the summer of 60, would have been about the time I might have gone out there to an employee, you know, barbecue where they were to finish the hot dogs and all this sort of stuff, and you sat around some campfire out at Cape Royal, and you sang songs. I remember singing one that drew a lot of applause, you know, to the dorm mother. You know, if it weren't for Mrs. Kiesel, all the girls here would go to hell. A lot of laughter, you know, because she was they were managed to be in on time and the straight and narrow.
She was the matron.
The matron, the women's dorm had the matron.
Mm-hmm.
And so that mattered.
How do you spell her last name?
K-I-E-S-E-L, because it rhymed with hell. Mrs. Kiesel. And she, I think, probably did that more than one summer.
Two L's or one, I'm sorry?
One L, I think. Okay. K-I-E-S-E-L.
Okay.
Mrs. Kiesel. Later, but we'll get to later. I had a role with her, but an assigned role. But for now, we knew her.
Yeah.
You know, and that was but I was still that all that summer. Yeah, I had not been promoted yet, so I was still in the dorm that summer.
That's right. So your rim to rim, where you met your Aunt Rosa on the
south rim
with your younger brother.
Yeah, that's right, Drew.
Then did you do the plane again, fly back across, or did you go with them, travel with them? How did that work?
I must have, I'm pretty sure that it would have been the airplane.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure with every trip, every time that I was over there, I'm pretty sure you came back on the plane. I'm trying to think of an exception, but one doesn't occur right now. It wasn't with them, and I probably flew back.
Okay.
And only once did I get the trip in that I told you, going down to the river, only one time.
Just down to the river and back
again? Well, no.
Or?
I mean, on the airplane.
Where you actually flew.
Where they actually did an extended tour of
59,
you paid 60 something, yeah. 59 or 60, somewhere in there, or 60, right. One of those years. It was, might have been as late as 60.
Speaking of 1960. A
little extra money, you know.
And the river, were you aware of the jet boat uprun in 1960? Did that make it up to the North Rim at all in your consciousness?
The jet boat, no, I did not. Okay. We did not know about that.
Okay.
The news was very slow up there.
How did you get your news?
It would be, seems to me the paper would come in days late.
Right.
Seemed like they deliver the paper, but other than that, unless you were listening to radio, there wouldn't be any news.
And you would have to bring your own, well, there might not have been any small transistor radios, or radio sets were fairly large in those days.
I can't even remember whether you'd go days really without knowing any news, it seems to me. I didn't, it was, I don't know that I... Now, along about the one summer, must have been, finally I got a, one or had a car at the very end, but not yet. So car might, I can't remember getting it any other way than that way.
Okay. What else about this summer of 1960 do you remember that?
I'm just making, let me see if I wrote any note about it. I did, I've named the names. He took organ lessons with Mike Canaan. My mother's helped organize that. We paid him a little bit, and I played the organ, some in the lodge lobby, and then also the LDS Church in Kanab, on request, allowed me to practice in there if I took the company bus to the Perry's Lodge. Now that was another outing we would do, would be to go to Perry's Lodge. You know, on days off, I can add that one in. The Perry's Lodge is a favorite because the company bus you could ride for free into Kanab on days off. And the usual thing you did then was you only had a long lunch. That's really all you had. You'd get in there at 10:30 in the morning. You'd swim in the Parry's Lodge pool. And then you would have a lovely cheeseburger lunch, probably, out there by that pool at Parry's Lodge. And then you would take the bus back. It would come through. Well, it would come through there about 3 o'clock. To take you back with the afternoon run back up to the North Rim. So that was a favorite kind of a weekly outing, which I am glad I mentioned.
And there was a store in Kanab, so you could maybe get a
you
something
could,
you
could
needed.
Get something that you needed if you needed to go to a store.
Okay.
I mean, I don't remember specifics about it, but there were stores. There was, and there were, that's right. And so I didn't write much more from... you've heard most of what I was able to write down.
What do you remember about Perry's Lodge? Where was that?
Perry's Lodge is still where it is. It's at the road goes north through Fredonia, north into Kanab, and then makes a left turn at a sweep there, and that's always been Perry's Lodge.
Mm.
And it's never changed. It's still the movie star stayed there. You know,
okay.
That's the sale point.
Mm.
So it had a certain tinge of glamour,
mm.
you know, because of that.
Okay.
And still does.
Okay.
And so that's, you would just, the bus would let you out there and you'd go for that pool.
Okay.
And they knew us. They knew the employees. We could use the pool.
Okay.
That would be a day in Kanab.
Nice. All right. And... the did you start spending days in Kanab every now and then on your first summer there?
Yeah, the first summer would just put them in every summer.
Okay,
it was a route. It wasn't like discovered late. It was a
right.
Everybody knew about that.
Okay,
so it was the regular thing. That was the Galo out of town trip you could make.
At this time, 58, 59, 60, 61, 62, that period, Glen Canyon Dam was under construction.
That's correct.
Did you go over there at all to check that out?
Yes, I made a note about that. And it was, I was trying to think for sure when, but I think it was probably in the later summer. Now, I wrote in a note that that I saw it under construction in one of the last two summers.
Okay.
Maybe the last one. It was halfway up. Whenever that summer was, it was halfway. I mean, all this, you know, a lot of that, the heavy duty crisscrossing of stuff was at least half, not complete, it was part way up. And maybe it was as late as 62, but I think we could say it was, we'd have to match
maybe
that.
Maybe 1960 even.
Yeah, so I saw that, and I remember a sense of foreboding when I saw a thing like that coming into that country. There was a sense of foreboding. This is not good.
Why?
It's a heavy duty industrialization in the canyon country. I knew there had been dispute about it, and that there was things being lost behind it. I knew, you know, not the detail, but just to see it, it was a shock. A shock. I've got a picture someplace, but I you know, and it's a shock. So it said this change was coming.
Yeah.
Now the we should, of course, we'll, you know, in that summer we will get to, well, it'll be when we get back to Hopkins. There was a Hopkins connection to that summer, but it's coming. I'm just putting a marker in for it, but and that's why this book is here. But it was not part of there. All right, that's the answer, I think, about the dam. There was some trip with Canans, and it seemed like I went with the Canans and one of my, Gary Lemon, it seems to me, he was somebody I liked, who was one of the boys that worked there. I mean, you know, I remember there was one trip over to Flagstaff with the Canans. You know, I remember that was a big deal to be able, maybe we even got to Desert View, I can't remember, but that was part of getting to know them, which led to rooming with them.
Okay.
So it would have been in the 60 or 61 summer, you know.
And that would have been a long
a long, long trip. I can't remember if we stayed or not, but I was over to Flag.
Right. It would make sense you'd spend the night actually in Flagstaff and then drive back.
Something like that, or Cameron. Yeah. I mean, we went over there, and that was very memorable, but that's definitely set up the friendship with the Canans that was important in my final years.
Okay. Muriel and Mike.
Muriel and Mike. So that had to have started early. And then, as I say, there was, and I remember Gary Lemon, and it was just somebody I liked and glad to, I can't remember any more in that of people, but that was a way, if you had vehicle, yes, you could do it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Were you writing home letters going back and forth?
There was some correspondence in those years. Of course, my father found a heavy duty work, and finally is starting his international foundation in those years and so forth. But there would have been letters. There have been letters back and forth. That's how that's how people wrote. You'd occasional phone call, but letters, you'd send letters. Okay. I don't have any here right now, but that's looking files.
Okay.
There might be other stories will come out from that, of course, once they're located, if they're locatable.
What else do you recall about that summer of 1960?
60, that's it. I wrote down notes about 60, and there was not anything else to say for me that I remember of any current event or major event. I mean, it's a little bit of some blurring through the two desk work summers.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
And there was not a, it was, life up there was pretty simple in a lot of ways. I mean, you didn't have major news events that were influencing anything there. It was just, and it was, you know, a short season, which only went from mid-June to end of August. I remember parents, as I said, picking me up the one summer early, and I, but maybe it happened either, I think it was only once, maybe twice, but other than that I don't remember anything else.
And your meals were at the employee cafeteria?
When we got to the end of 61, let's see, were we in 60 summer? We're still in the 60 summer. It didn't change until the next summer. So the meals were in a side dining room over by the kitchen. And they fed us in there. It was, I don't know what they use that room now for, probably to feed the help in there. They probably still do. It was unforgettable to have my first meal in there when I arrived. You know, that was, you remember that first meal. Oh, yes, in that room by the kitchen, with smaller windows. Yeah, and that's where we, so all through that summer, we continued to eat those meals in that room. And they would be pretty early if you were in for breakfast, because you had to be there to have your breakfast first before they opened the dining. And you didn't get fed, you didn't get, it was not the it was not always off the menu of the dining room. It was not much of a choice that you were just simply fed.
Right. Sort of cereal or eggs for breakfast, yeah. And
some kind of sandwiches for lunch, mm-hmm. And some kind of a reasonable. You were fed all right. I mean, there was one dispute about that arose in the summer of 62, which I'll get to. But okay. we were fed all right.
All right. We've been going about an hour. Should we try to go through 1961?
I'm all right. Is it, except can I have a little sugar need, or maybe I put a, I don't know if I put a sandwich in here or something.
Well, maybe we should just wrap this up.
Well, no, I'm all right. I'm okay. Just go ahead. We'll go into 61. If you like.
Well, it's, you know what? Let's don't. We've been at this an hour. Let's call it good. We're in no rush here.
All right. You're getting some good stuff. Yeah. No, that's fine.
Is there anything else about 1960 that we hadn't talked about that you want to bring in before we wrap up part two?
No. That was because the big changes were 61 and 2, not 60 so much. So okay. I can't remember anything about 60 that I wanted to talk about. No.
Okay. Well, in that case, maybe this is a good place. We will go ahead and finish up. This is concludes then part two, Grand Canyon Oral History Interview with right. Dick Hingson. Today is Monday, September 2nd, 2019. My name is Tom Martin, and Dick, thank you very much.
Okay. Pleasure.